Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC event. With your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
The Guru, back again for UFC Vegas 65, Derek Lewis taking on Sergey Spivak in your heavyweight main event, also known as UFC Fight Night 215 and UFC on ESPN Plus 73. But before we can get into this wacky card, we got a good friend in the house, co-host of the Club and Sub podcast, a guy that self-admittedly loves MMA, and he occasionally wins some bets. I know what that's like, my friend. Thanks so much for joining us, John Stargaryan of the Club and Sub podcast.
What's up, boys? Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm pumped to get into it. Danny Lags put me onto the show a bit ago. It's awesome. And yeah, occasionally I do win money. Didn't happen last weekend, thanks to Israel Adesanya, but hopefully we get back on the horse this weekend.
We know exactly what that's like. We watched our boy Izzy go down and sprinted out of the garden as quick as we possibly could. But yeah, man, we're going to turn that around this week, cash a couple checks here. I think that's the right thing to do. What do you think, TB? You're muted. That's what I think. I think TB's muted. He'll get there.
Oh, no. Well, the first matter of business here, I am proud to announce Mushroom Philly, Mr. Rob Glansman, is back in the chat, baby. I did all the requisite legwork. The accidental blocking can all be swept under the rug. Moyes Audio wants to submit me to the carousel and the people's court. But guess what? We're back, baby. The crime has been uncommitted. We got Mushroom back. Of course, man, we're so happy to have you back. Daz knows, Mushroom's in the chat. Listen, Pub Sports, apparently they got our boy Daz blocked, so you boys better figure it out. If you need help, reach out. I can help you. You know, now I know what to do to unblock. You got to get with the program. And listen, as we know, the potheads are smarter than the drunks, right? So, and yes, John, the club or the sub, baby? What do you like?
Shout out to Soft Bacon Nation, Rob Glansman.
Yes, Soft Bacon Gang, let's go.
I really think that people that like really truly like burnt crispy bacon are the same types that like well done steak.
Dude, they're not telling the truth. They're lying. Yeah.
There's you like, want to hear? I couldn't. Yeah, maybe like yeah. Maybe crunchy bacon in something specific, like for a specific. But soft bacon.
Shut up! Shut up, Guru. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was trying to be understanding. You go, John.
No. I was just going to say, you want to know how full of shit the well-done steaks people are. My wife is a well-done steaks person. And I took her out about a month ago to a fairly fancy steakhouse. I always get my steaks medium rare. I get it. My steak is shit. I'm like, what the hell? This is so tough. Turns out, she tells me she has the best steak of her life. It turns out they actually cooked her steak medium rare and mine well done. Sure enough, the well-done person was talking about how the medium rare was the best steak of her life. No one actually likes crispy bacon. No one does.
No, they just have been too afraid to try the soft bacon, I think is your point.
That is my point.
Come over to the soft side, you know. More importantly, as we've discussed the diatribes of Mushroom Lunches Nation, we got some boys that are interested in some lunch. We got our heavyweight main event, Derek the Black Beast Lewis versus Sergey the Polar Bear Spivak. We're skipping over the TB nicknames for the main card, people, because we got some serious business to account for. And Derek Lewis is listed as a +165 against Sergey Spivak and -195. Realistically, before I pass it off, as I talk about our advantages, disadvantages, these guys size up extremely well. They're like, okay, Derek Lewis has a 1-inch reach event. Like, all right, cut the shit. I want to see what they look like at face-offs because, like, honestly, that you know, how big does Derek Lewis look compared to Sergey? I think that it could be like 30, 40 pounds, depending how much Derek Lewis has cut down and has trimmed out this camp. But ultimately, from a guy who got knocked out in round one against your boy Walt Harris, it makes me real sketched out for Sergey to have to last not three, but five rounds against Derek Lewis. And we've seen him at any point of the fight. The only thing you worry about is, does he give up in the ground and pound, or is it his moment to escape as always and just kind of like stand up and get back to his feet as he always does. So Guru, I mean, what are you seeing here? Because Mushroom's thinking Spivak inside the distance and PC Strickland, our boy that we saw at the show, he's thinking Derek Lewis by knuckle sandwich, baby.
What I think is interesting is the point you made about the weight about Sergey Spivak, which sent me on a look. Going back to the Tom Aspinall fight, he weighs in 238. Then he weighs in for Greg Hardy, 243.5. And then for the next fight against Augusto Sakai, his last fight, he weighs in 249.5. So over the course of three fights, he's now gained 11 pounds on the scale. So is he continuing to bulk up to heavyweight? Does he come closer to 250, 255? Like he was 250. Is he coming 255? Is he coming 260? How is that going to continue to affect his cardio? All very interesting points. People that have tried to take Derek Lewis down, right, have had somewhat of decent success doing so, right? Derek Lewis has not so great takedown defense at 55%. I just don't know necessarily that they're known for, like, controlling and holding him down. You saw somebody like Curtis Blaydes, who I would say is probably a better wrestler than Sergey Spivak, just kind of struggled to get in on those takedowns and do the work that he needed. That being said, Curtis Blaydes had kind of fallen in love with his hands. So it's kind of maybe a game plan issue as well. I find myself thinking a few things. I think the line is too wide because, as we know, power is the great equalizer and Derek Lewis loves knocking people out. I think if you're going to play Derek Lewis, you cannot – there's no reason to play money line. There's no reason to do anything except play him by knockout. I think it's his only path to victory. I don't think he wins by submission, and I don't think he wins a decision. So if you're betting Derek Lewis, you're betting Derek Lewis by knockout. I think FanDuel has the best line at that at plus 230. I don't know. If you want to get spicy, I don't know. I don't think this fight goes to the championship rounds, right? So that's probably a decently stackable. It's like minus 410. Fight doesn't start round four. So it's terrible odds. So I don't really know where you guys want to go. I was thinking, like I said, on Derek Lewis by knockout, but I don't know. Something could tell me that Sergey could just hold him in the clinch and batter him. To me, this is Derek Lewis's last ride. Like, this is his real last chance to prove any sort of durability. He has an undefeated record in the Apex on the line here. I think he likes the low pressure. I think he likes the smaller octagon. I don't think he likes the bright lights. That being said, he's a main event again against another tough guy that's won five out of his last six. No shortage of tough guys, or at least streaking guys, for Derek Lewis. Without further ado, been way too long. What's up, John? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think on paper, it's actually a very good fight for Spivak. You know, regarding, you know, the size, as you brought up, he continues to weigh in heavier. Spivak, by heavyweight standards, is really, you know, a child, like a baby. He's like 27 years old. You know, you usually don't see guys at heavyweight really start to make their runs till early to lower mid-40s. And, I mean, at 27, you'd imagine he's just starting to fill into that frame a bit. But, look, I mean, the bottom line is you touched on most of the important parts of the fight. You know, it's grappler versus striker. I do think once Spivak gets his hands on him and can get him down, he's going to maul him, to be honest. It's the thing is, I think Spivak's wrestling, I'd agree with you, is not on the level of Curtis Blaydes's, but his top game, he's extremely good at wrestle riding. He throws a ton of ground and pound, much more so than most guys in this division. He's positionally very sound, and it's like once he can kind of get his wrestling series going, it's very hard to disengage. I guess the problem for me, and like with all of that said, it's like, well, I think he's going to maul him on the mat. Why wouldn't I pay him at minus 200? With all of that said, I have some fundamental issues with how he approaches takedowns. Or I shouldn't even say issues, but it's very like judo and throw heavy. And obviously, Derek Lewis is a gigantic man. I don't know that it's going to be. It could be difficult for him to land some of those throws early in the fight. And Lewis is very strong. And so him clinching up with Lewis, if he can't get takedowns right away, well, I mean, we've seen Spivak melted in the past. I wouldn't call him a quitter, but he also has seemed a bit wilty when he's gotten hurt in the past as well. And so while I was kind of interested in Spivak in the minus 170 range, you know, the bottom line is, while I think Lewis is steadily declining here at this point in his career, it wouldn't shock me if he can force a few standing exchanges for a round or two. And if that's the case, it's really hard to feel comfortable with Spivak minus 200. So, I mean, with all that being said, I do think Spivak is deserved favorite, has a clear path to victory, but I'm not like clamoring to make a bet on it.
Without a doubt. And I think you've seen time and time again, these heavy favorites, especially in main events, like not come through. And I, like I said, you know, with the start of my breakdown, I think it's a line issue. I think the line is too wide. So you're 1,000% correct. Sergey Spivak is without a doubt the clear favorite and should be. I'm not playing my money on him. It's Derek Lewis by knockout or bust. Or like, you know, like a early prop. Like I don't know if there's even more money on it though. Derek Lewis round one, round two grouping, maybe the fight to end in that grouping. I'm not sure what those lines look like.
Lewis round one is actually +450. That's not bad.
Not bad. I
think
it's actually not bad at all, to be honest.
If you're expecting it to happen quick and like that's part of the game plan here, I get it. I think we could see a couple rounds of Spivak even getting some top control. But if you're on the Lewis side, I think you kind of just do the knockout. I don't know why you'd have to be hunting for even further value than what you're getting.
Or just go round one, round two.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That, I mean, +450, +1,000. Like I know there's this narrative. Not even narrative. I know Derek Lewis has a number of late KOs. But let's be honest. It's not because he's a cardio god by any means. And the truth is, if this fight gets extended with the kind of like pace Spivak's going to push, I don't really think a late Lewis KO is on the table here personally. So I think round one, round two would be the way to look at it.
What's up, UFC Egg? What's cracking, baby? I like that little pun there.
And they actually have it posted on FanDuel. Derek Lewis to win by KO in rounds one or two is +310. Derek Lewis to win by KO in rounds one, two, or three is +250. Interesting.
Yeah, sure. I think at the end of the day, I remain on the if I'm going to partake in the Lewis side, I'm just going to be smacking myself if some dumb shit happens and the fight extends or whatever, and I'm going to be looking at Guru like, why the fuck wasn't +165 money line or +230 knockout like good enough, man? Like, what? Why wasn't it good? So at the end of the day, though, it's like if you are on the Spivak side, just to flip the tables here, I would say you want to be doing it in like a Spivak and over 1.5. Like, I don't think Spivak is like, I don't think Lewis is necessarily the quitter that it's made out to be. I think facing a guy like Ciryl Gane, where he gets you frustrated from distance when like you're supposed to have the explosive distance coverage. And like, yeah, I get giving up in that regard, but like he hasn't given up from like, I got taken down a couple times regard. And I think that Lewis's danger is like going to, and also like you talked about the takedowns. They come from catching kicks or like judo throws, like you said. And it's like Lewis doesn't necessarily put himself in those types of, he's going to stand all the way from distance, try to throw some stupid flying shit, coming in with crazy whatever, but he's going to be low volume and standing from distance. So Sergey's going to have to come into the danger zone if he wants to make anything happen. Exactly. So yeah, man. It's just, so at the end of the day, you're giving me Lewis at that price. It's like, fucking man, let's have a good time on Lewis.
Was that Rodney Dangerfield? Because you're in the danger zone.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So you caught me, man. That's it. So is Derek Lewis the danger zone himself? I don't know. It's much more fun betting the Black Beast at plus money than like having real expectations. Plus, small cage, man. Got to force the action here. So fuck it. That's where I'm at. And you boys got any last words before we get on to our slamming co-main event here?
No, I think it's super exciting. I think there's going
to
be a
finish. Same.
All right.
Always love Derek Lewis fights.
Yeah, man. Always a good time, man. So Kennedy Zechuku versus Iwan Kutelaba. Guru, do you have the actual nicknames for me?
The Hulk.
Okay, Kutelaba, yes. Right.
And African Savage.
Okay,
Kennedy cool. And Zechuku.
I like that. Okay, so we're still doing okay as far as the real nicknames go.
Nobody cares about your bullshit nicknames.
No, not yet at least. Don't worry, we'll get the chat popping later with the TB nicknames. Make sure you guys drop your favorites. But so we have a matchup here that, you know, it's like the same old shit for Iwan Kutelaba, huh? Third time in a row facing some tall, athletic, you know, rangy, you know, but this is probably the lowest level.
I actually believe it's the third time in a row he's facing the top three tallest in the entire division. I believe I saw that somewhere. I believe that's a real stat.
Iwan, I should move down to 185 Kutelaba. I mean, that one is actually fair. You know, I think that's a point that we're trying to make here is that Kutelaba size-wise is actually a little smaller and he's been facing the tallest guys. And for someone that's so relentless with their takedowns and aggression, it's like Mike Chandler style when it comes to the wrestling. they're not just like looking for control. It's like they're looking to be like as explosive and dominant and, you know, finish happy as possible. So, you know, Kennedy, were you watching the last couple of fights, buddy? You think you got that front choke game set up? You think, you know, I saw you wrestling our boy Carl Robertson out there last time. So, like, you think you're ready for Ewan to gas out?
Wait, whose boy Carl Robertson?
Well, he's from Neptune. I'm like just saying, he's a Jersey boy. You know, like,
fine.
You know, I mean, we got to represent even the ones that aren't the best. I mean, come
bro,
on.
Bro, fuck Carl Robertson.
Yeah, 100%.
He's a nice guy.
100%. 100%.
He's a nice guy, but. But yeah, cost me some money.
Fuck betting on Carl Roberson. Let's put it that way. But yeah, back to the ultimate point though is that Kennedy and Zechuku by submission at plus 1100 just seems a little bit interesting given how Ewan's last few fights have gone and like the type of game plan we can expect. At the same time, you know, you go and look at the, you know, Zechuku's got, you know, one submission attempt on record, which means he's probably had a few other ideas of submissions happening in the past. That's kind of how UFC works. It's like you can attempt for submissions, but they won't necessarily give it to you unless it's like deep. If Joe Rogan says, oh my God, he almost has it, it's deep, then like they'll give you a submission attempt. But otherwise, like he definitely has a bit of that game. So overall, like, okay, I don't want to play Kennedy and Zechuku at minus 175, but Ewan Kudelaba, you've hurt my heart too many times to even want to take you a plus 150, especially against the same prototype guy. You've just shown if you can't out physical a guy, you're not going to fucking beat him. So why would I trust you here too? As much as I really wanted to pull the trigger on the plus 150, my dog's coming in the main event here. And like, I just feel like that Kennedy submission prop could be so wacky and stupid and just the same old trope for Ewan. So Guru, I mean, now that I've given like a greasy, greasy prop, you take us away on some analysis you feel good about.
Yeah, listen, man, I got another greasy, greasy prop, and it's just a different kind of angle, right? You see Kennedy Zechuku win his last fight, right, by elbows from back mount, but it takes him to round three against Carl Roberson, who gets immediately cut. So, like, really, that fight was kind of going to a decision. Carl wanted, really, really wanted out of there badly. And then you look back at Ewan Kudelaba's last two fights, right? He fights Johnny Walker, killer be killed, like absolute electric savage. And again, Kudelaba is like doing the right thing, relatively speaking, like he does against Ryan Spann, and just puts himself in a terrible position. Has some of the worst fight IQ you ever want to see possible. He literally overswings on a punch against Ryan Spann, misses, whiffs completely, and lands straight into a guillotine choke. You can't script it. It's fucking crazy. With all that being said, I feel like everyone and their grandma is betting this fight doesn't go the distance, and they're going to finish each other. How about we don't do that this time? How about I put on my tinfoil hat, and how about I go crazy and bet this fight goes the distance at plus 300, or even fight to start round three at plus 156. Because you've seen when Ewan Kudelaba is winning the fight, he's not the same guy that he was in the beginning, willing to go balls to the wall, go for that crazy knockout, right? He's much more patient, like when not fighting crazy explosive finishers like Ryan Spann and Johnny Walker. Then you see on the flip side of Kennedy and Zechuku, like we said, takes him a while to finish Carl Roberson. He doesn't finish or get finished by Nicolai Negomarianu and gets finished quickly by Dong Jung, who's kind of a beast. And again, with Danilo Marquez completely gasses out. Otherwise, that fight's probably going the distance too. So, I don't know. I just kind of like it. Decision with Darko Stošić. Call me crazy. I'm definitely dumpster diving here on an absolute dumpster of a co-main event. Like, this could open up any fight card ever. But, Mr. Stargaryen, what do you got for us?
Yeah, I don't think you're that crazy, to be honest. I actually kind of like the over here, and I kind of like the goes the distance, to be honest with you. In terms of the fight, I think the line is more or less correct. Like, you know, I said this on my show earlier, but, I mean, Kutalaba's game at this point is so predictable in how this is going to play out, you know. He's going to come out hot. He's probably going to try to aggressively wrestle Kennedy. And we know when push comes to shove, if you can't get him out of there in the first round, he's very likely going to gas out and lose badly down the stretch. In terms of the matchup itself, look, he can probably take Kennedy down, but Kennedy doesn't accept bottom. He's going to work up right away. This dude spent 8 minutes underneath Danilo Marquez. I don't think there's much danger of Kudalaba submitting him here. So I do think Kennedy should win in a good clip. I think in terms of betting aside, I'd much rather wait live, though. You know Kudalaba's best round is going to be the first. Even like I would rather, if Kennedy somehow shocks us and wins round one, right, I'd rather lay minus 250 on Kennedy after a round than minus 170 on him before the first round, just because we know what Kudalaba's bringing. But again, I'm not passionate on his side. I think Kennedy's a more well-rounded fighter, and I think he has – well, I shouldn't even say I think. He has an enormous cardio edge here. So I'd expect him to take over the fight. But we know Kudalaba's going to attempt takedowns, and we know Kennedy, to your point, you know, this is a guy who's gone to decision – I mean, this guy was 30 seconds from a decision with Paul Craig. He only landed 40 strikes in that fight. You know, when Kennedy fights grapplers, he's a lot more restrained and doesn't tend to let his hands go nearly as much. And so I think this has the makings of a kind of fight where we see a lot of Kudalaba cage push, maybe Kennedy stalking him and not letting his hands go. But I kind of like this fight to go deep. So give me the over here.
I like that. I like you guys fitting a little narrative over here. Look at you fellas.
John, you fit right into the family, bud. That's like that's one of the main talking points on our show, right? We love that hashtag fade the narrative, right? We want to go against the recency bias. I think that there's a little bit of recency bias in terms of finishing here. And one of the other things we loved about the show, right? Chronic Combat Conversations. We want to open up the dialogue. A lot of breakdown shows. You come, you present your information. Cool, no problem. We move on. We here, we like to have that discourse. We like to open it up. And when we get on the same sides, we celebrate, baby. So cheers.
Cheers.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. So that'll bring us right along to the fight that all the people have been waiting all week for us to break down. Ever since this matchup got announced 2 weeks ago, the people wondered, are they going to wait to put it on the next pay-per-view? No, you got to give the people what they want. We got Chase Sherman versus Waldo Cortez Acosta. Is it the vanilla gorilla?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. All right. It's one of the five vanilla gorillas that are trash in the UFC versus Waldo Cortez Acosta. Guru, do we have an official nickname?
No? Yeah, probably. Yes, got it. Salsa Boy.
Salsa Boy.
All right. That's actually kind of entertaining. He wins the nickname battle. Who actually wins this fight? I'm not sure if I care or if I'm really going to have a solid pick on a side here. I'll just say the fact that I was trying to fade Salsa Boy against Jared Vandera, and I saw Jared Vandera land 300 leg kicks, but like none with enough real significance. Like, first of all, that pain can't have like fully healed in like the 2 weeks since he took all those. And then the other thing is that like Chase Sherman's got some like real solid leg kicks. He's also got some like actually somewhat solid boxing. The thing is, if you wrestle Chase Sherman, if you push Chase Sherman to deep waters, if you turn him to the nail, it's really fucking ugly. But they match up in size. Chase Sherman, like, you look at the striking. I mean, the dude has the pace numbers. The dude has the distance landed numbers. He doesn't necessarily have the defense, but, like, our boy Waldo couldn't get fucking Mountain Man out of there last time. And Jared Vandera, come on, Waldo. Where's Waldo at? Because obviously he didn't show up last fight if you weren't finishing Jared Vandera. So it's where's Waldo Acosta versus Chase. How many fucking gorillas are there in the UFC? Sherman, Guru, go ahead.
Yeah. So the thing with Waldo is that he kind of like has that sneaky power. Like he kind of hits you like with 30%, 40%. Like he doesn't throw his hardest because his cardio is shit. And I think he knows that. So he doesn't really get those early KOs per se as much, right? You see that. And when he fights Thomas Peterson at LFA 129, right? He has to wait until Peterson has completely slop-fest and gassed himself out to finally get that finish. And I believe I like the over in that Jared Vandera fight. I believe that's what we were talking about. I think we bet it to be a slop-fest and go over. So that's, and I kind of like the same thing here, and I'm just going to go, you know, one step further and highlighting Chase Sherman. Chase Sherman just had a fight booked 2 weeks ago versus Josh Parisian. I feel like I'm not 100% sure, but Chase Sherman probably doesn't cut weight. He's a 253. I don't know what kind of, you know, I'm not a fighter, right? These guys peak at different times during camp. So I don't know where he's at right now mentally or physically to be in this fight. I'm sure he's hungry to fucking get a check, and we know that. I just don't know that he's going to have what it takes to beat Waldo Cortez, especially because I think his specific hole is the grappling. If you want to beat Waldo, you got to be a guy like Sergey Spivak. Go take this guy down. It'll be like real quick, nice and easy. But I don't think that's happening here. We know Chase Sherman doesn't grapple. It's right there on the stats. 15, you know, a ton of different 13 fights, and hasn't really taken any takedown attempts. Taken zero takedown attempts. So, John, what do you got? I'm on Waldo, but I'm not betting him at -220 because that's silly. So I like fight goes the distance.
I like the over for one. It seems like Chase Sherman, despite throwing with violent intent, doesn't seem to ever really do enough damage to put guys away. It's kind of odd because my eyes tell me he should have power, but he doesn't actually hurt people. that's one possibility.
He was juicing. He got suspended for it.
But in terms of the fight, so the only reason I haven't bet Sherman is the line, because I find the line movement very, very strange. Sherman seems to be a very trendy underdog pick this week, and yet the line is moving towards Waldo Acosta Cortez. I don't know why that is, but I've found throughout my life that just ignoring it and saying, oh, you know, it's just an idiot. Now, idiots don't move lines. Either big money or very sharp people does. I don't think there's a lot of big money coming in on Chase Sherman and Waldo Acosta Cortez. So that's my one concern. But on paper, I don't really like Waldo's game that much. I don't like Chase Sherman's game either, to be clear. But I just don't think either guy has a lot of upside in the UFC. But I think Sherman, at least, you know, he's a worse defensive striker, but I think he's a bit sharper in the pocket. I think he's got a sharper jab than Waldo does. And, you know, I don't want to just feed into the narrative because it's obvious, but it's true. We literally just saw this guy get his leg kicked in half 3 weeks ago. Now he's coming back against Chase Sherman, who's a much better calf kicker than Jared Bandera is, and who throws a lot of calf kicks. So we don't know what his calf is like. We know that the calf kick has become one of the best weapons in MMA, and Sherman throws it, and Acosta can't do anything to stop it. So it's like, I look at it, and it's, can Acosta really be -200 here? Like, their volume's going to be similar, right? It's right there in the numbers. Sherman's fought better competition, that's for sure. Sherman does something that affects him, and this guy's not going to come out here and grapple Chase Sherman. Not a chance. So I'm leaning to the Chase side here. I like the over most of any bet here, but I might bet Chase.
You know, the over 1.5 at -140 is really not too bad, because you can still get your TKO by leg kicks. I wish you could get bet specifically by leg kicks. That'd be so fun. But I really wanted to make sure that the prop was there, and I'm surprised by it. Chase Sherman by KO +420. So that's a little steep in a way that, you know, probably, you know, might be his best win condition.
I hate talking about a knockout if you're talking about an over. You know what I mean? It's tough to.
It's fair.
You know, fair. It's tough to want to be on both of those.
I just
think goes the distance is +200.
I just think that specifically, if you're getting a KO as Chase Sherman, who just got a KO late, you're gonna get it through accumulative damage. He doesn't have one hit KO power early in fights. He's gonna have to batter this guy. That's like John was saying, possibly battered from a fight 3 weeks ago. So I actually kind of like that, because again, we're on this fight. Like, if you're betting your full units, like if you're bet, you're crazy. Like you got 1-800 gamble. Like, this is fun sprinkle stuff. Like, we're handicapping it. We like to break it down. I just don't think it's worth your hard earned money. John, you agree with that kind of thought process?
I mean, I would, like I said, the one thing deterring me from missing a decent sized wager on Sherman is the line movement. But it is a very low level fight, but I would argue that because it's a low level fight and we're having that conversation, would actually give more credence to the idea that there's probably value on the Sherman side.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's true. It also, you know, increases the volatility, but hey, we see high level fights like the main event last week, and there's still plenty of volatility. So it's just a volatile sport.
Yeah, so that brings us along to a fight I can actually get excited about in a non-sarcastic way. We got Andrei Fialho versus Muslim Salikov. I am really jazzed up for this one. I think, Muslim ran into a tough one in Li Jingliang last time, and Fialho ran into like a whole new man in Jake Matthews in his last appearance. So one of the things that jumps out on paper, though, and on tape, is that, Andrei Fialho has some of the worst striking defense I've seen. Some of the worst, not the worst, but you can see it's very significant difference from Muslim's in the statistics and on tape. I'll give Muslim a pass on the Lee fight. I will say he did look, like as Lee puts on the forward pressure, he starts getting a little tired on the back foot. I don't think Andre brings as sophisticated of a pressure approach or as good a footwork. So I'm not as worried about Muslim's gas tank. And I think Fialho's heavy boxing to the face approach, the guy's like really not mixing it up to the body or the legs enough. And it makes it predictable on defense. So for a guy that already has a 20% defense advantage from defense against a guy that's not looking to wrestle in Fialho, at the end of the day, I mean, I'm going to take the king of kung fu, right? I mean, and especially he opens minus 160 and people are like, oh, we got to gobble up that Fialho money while we can. What the fuck, man? Why is Muslim all the way down to minus 115 for me here? I'll go ahead and keep on waiting when they're like, oh, he looks old at the face off, blah, blah, blah. I mean, he has always looked pudgy and old. Like, that's what he's looked like since he got in the UFC. If I can get Muslim even or plus money, let's have a fun time. And like my people in the chat, Fialho KO plus 440, three units Fialho, and that goes back to the last fight there, Mushroom. Yep. So, at the end of the day, like I appreciate you guys. I love you guys, but give me Muslim Salikov for a bounce back here. I really think he would have been able to clinch and grapple a guy like Fialho when he gets originally hurt, as opposed to a guy like Lee when it happened. So I don't think his chin is shot. He didn't go out. The dude got dropped and finished by a really good power striker in Lee. I'm also a Lee boy, so, take that as you may. Go ahead, Guru.
Yeah, this is a fight that's kind of had me back and forth all week. I was kind of started on the Andrei Fialho side. Dog money. This Muslim Salikov just got knocked out. He's older. Right, you know how I feel when the guy is younger, got a height and reach advantage. You're already winning 60% of the fights blind right there. So the tape's got to match up. And I'm just not 1,000% sold that the tape matches up. Sure, there can be a decent drop-off with Muslim Salikov. I'm not sure that Andre is the same, like TB kind of was alluding to, right? Same level of striker as Li Jingliang. Can he had the same level of multifaceted attacks, right? I just think Andrei Fialho is a headhunter. And if that's the case, I think Muslim can, do what he generally does, have incredible defense, right? A 66.5% defense across seven UFC fights. That's not an anomaly. That's earned defensive strike.
That's just regular defense. The distance defense is even better at 69%.
69, got to get that one in there. And he's spending 87% of his time at distance. So it's not like he's using a ton of grappling, which he can still use, halfway decently at 1.1 takedowns for 15 minutes. So I just think obviously both guys are getting a step down in competition here. It's fairly obvious to say that Muslim Salikov is not as good as Jake Matthews, right? But I just think that, like TB said, if the line opens minus 160 and now you have Muslim Salikov at minus 118 and Fialho at minus 108. Like, there's no value on Fialho here. I like Muslim to kind of grind him out and, maybe spoil a couple people's dog shots here. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I mean, 2 years ago, I'd be max betting Muslim here, to be completely honest with you. My big concern, look, I agree with everything you guys said. I think from a skill perspective, the fight's not really even competitive, to be honest. Muslim's a much better striker. He's a better kicker. He's a better boxer. He's got better defense. Obviously it shows it in the stats there, and he's fought better guys. He's probably got similar level of power. He's a better wrestler. I mean, everything lines up to bet Muslim big here. The big concern that I have is he is older. He's 38 years old. He hasn't been super active. I thought he looked pretty slow against Leach, which was pretty concerning to me because while I think Fialho is kind of garbage for this level, to be honest, he is fast and he hits pretty hard. And so, you know, those are real things. Fialho's 26 and getting better, whereas Muslim's 38 and potentially aging out here a bit. So the question to me ultimately is, like, is Muslim's potential floor, which could be quite low depending on where he is, does it outweigh what his potential ceiling is here? And ultimately, I'm not entirely sure, but I will tell you this. I'll be betting Muslim if that number hits plus. I would never bet Fialho on this spot because my view is – I mean, Muslim Salikov was just minus 200 against Li Jingliang. And now he is picking against Andre Fialho. I mean, that one of these things doesn't make sense. Whether or not you think the Leach was value, he probably was. Either way, the market believed Muslim deserved to be minus 200 in that spot. And now that same market believe is having a massive overcorrection the other way. So, I mean, I think Muslim's the clear side here. You know, I don't – it would be very hard for me – to make a bet on Fialho here. Like, I would have to know something was really wrong with Muslim. But again, I'm not dying to play it just because, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen at his age. You know, it can all go at once when you get to his age. But on paper, I think it's a good spot for Muslim. And if he hits plus money, I'm going to bet him here.
I agree completely. If I could get some Muslim plus money, I would love to smash that. But, I'm going to probably hold off. For sure I'm holding off to weigh-ins with this guy's age and Fahalyu's, you know, slight layoff. I definitely want to see how these guys weigh in and look.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally fair. I would do like a Muslim let's see, round 3 or decision is plus 175. I don't think he gets an early finish. Fialho will be dangerous and he'll be on the back foot and keeping his distance and you know, clinching when he gets a takedown, it's really not to do anything crazy. It's just to change the pace and make you think about something.
I kind of think that depends largely on how aggressive Fialho is. Cause like, you know, like Muslim is like, if Fialho stands on the outside and gives him a low volume fight, he'll take it. But if Fialho comes for him and tries to brawl, you know, he'll throw down, you know, and like he could definitely get him out of there early if Fialho comes out like, very aggressively.
Fialho by KO in round 1 is plus 380. I feel like that's the best way he wins too. So
yeah, and I think it's going to be pretty apparent early in this fight, you know, where Muslim is. And so, you can honestly make
– I was about to say, same thing. I think it may be a live betting opportunity. I think you're about to say that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, you know, you basically – if you decide to live bet it, you can get 2 minutes and make sure Muslim's not a corpse before you bet it here. Because that is the – again, to me, that's the whole concern. If he's fine, he's going to cruise here. Jake Matthews just lit this dude up at distance. Very confident that Muslim's a better striker than Jake Matthews is.
I agree, man. I love the way you said that. And see, two minds think alike, that we both were thinking live bet at the same time. So I love that.
All right. So, hey, make sure you guys go ahead, give us a little like and subscribe. We're doing some work out here for you and – bring you our best bets, best guess, always free picks. And, you know, we would appreciate you guys throwing a little like on the video, leaving a comment. It goes a long way. So that's the end of the spiel there. We appreciate you guys. And here we go. Mushroom is ready for this. Was that supposed to be the next fight now? Did they move things around? Because
no, you skipped Jack. I'm good. You skipped
Jack. Oh, did it? Oh, I hit the button too fast. Yes. Oopsies. My bad. I actually had it the right order.
Okay. All good, bud.
Just poor execution. No, all right. So we got Jack Della Maddalena versus Danny Hot Chocolate and the Guru Hates Me So Much Roberts. So Jack Della has just been electric from Contender Series all the way through his first couple appearances here. Seems to be getting the slow roll. You would have thought, what was it? Roberts and Ameev fought each other, right? So yeah, at the end of the day, it's like if Ameev beat Roberts, then like we would have had a flip-flop of who fought who. So it's like now instead of facing Ramazan Ameev second, you know, he's facing Danny Roberts second. I think the song remains the same. Shout out to Led Zeppelin. realistically, Jack Della comes out with peace. Danny Roberts loves doing chicken dances. It's one of his favorite activities to do in the octagon. And a guy like Trinaldo, you can't trust to get a finish because, you know, he just loves clinching and grappling when he hurts people and not in a finish type of mode at this stage. Jack Della Maddalena is a shark, man. And he's, you know, by murder on under 1.5 knockout round one. I don't like the round one, round two, because you get minus money. Ends by knockout. Yeah. LOLs. Skip Jack. All the kids are playing it. I agree. Sometimes all the kids are right. This just seems like one of those moments where, like, Danny Roberts already got his fuckboy win over Ramazan Ameev, and now he's being punished for it. That's the way I see this one. I mean, that's just a simplistic way, but go ahead, Guru.
Dude, if anybody that's a long, long time follower of this show knows that Danny Roberts is in that elite list of fighters that I just absolutely loathe. So Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts, I hope he gets lit up like a Christmas tree as soon as possible. I cannot wait to see it. I think Jack does it, though, too. So I think you're right. I think this is just one of those public plays that's actually right for a change. And barring a shoulder separation, ACL tear, his toe falling off, whatever, Jack should be getting it done by finish. What do you think, John?
I don't know, boys. I hear hot chocolate's great in Vegas this time of year. I'm betting Danny Roberts here, to be honest with you. I think there's a lot of reasons to be high on Jack Della Maddalena. Obviously, his volume is crazy. Can't deny it. Slick boxer. It's hard. Great body work. But with that said, this dude's got a lot of flaws, man. Like, people talk about, you know, the good parts of his game, but very few people talk about the fact that he's pretty defensively void in the pocket. He's been hurt multiple times throughout his career to date. The guy's grappling is virtually non-existent. You know, he even attempted one takedown and had him in a deep sub almost immediately. Seeing him held down on a pretty bad Aussie regional scene. Aljaluso was taking him down whenever he wanted to. I mean, and the truth is, while he's been impressive, like, let's look at Jack Maddalena's wins. Pete Rodriguez, bum, doesn't really matter. And Meeve is a good win. It's admittedly a good win, but he took him out with a body shot, like, pretty quickly in that fight. So it's like, we didn't even really get to see that fight play out. And, you know, Roberts, whatever you want to say about him, can he be wilty or flaky? Sure. But he's an athletic guy. He hits hard. He's been competitive with other really good guys in this division. He's got over 10 UFC fights. You know, he can grapple a bit. Is it his plan A? Not usually. But, like, would anybody really be shocked if Danny Roberts was to land a couple takedowns here and get meaningful control? I don't know, man. To me, those flaws in and of themselves, combined with a guy as seasoned as Roberts, makes minus 550 just impossible. Like, I think you want to tell me Jack Della is minus 200, wins this 2 out of 3? I think that's a reasonable take. I that's about where I put it. But I do not – I mean, just a guy with the flaws of Jack, to me, until I see improvements there, can't possibly be this wide against Roberts.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying, especially in terms of playing the money line. I don't see a reason to play the money line here. All that value is gone. Maybe if you'd got it when it opened – if you're really a sharp line scrambler, good for you. I like that type of stab. But you're 100% right. Playing him at minus 400 and change is a recipe for disaster. I would actually be surprised to see Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts go for a takedown.
I would be as well. But we're capping potential outcomes, right?
He does, right? He does. You know, he does attempt, according to our stats, he does attempt 2.34. per 15 minutes. He just doesn't really get any because any.
He doesn't get any.
Well, I mean, 16% control rate's pretty good.
A lot of that is his ugly clinch activity, though. The control rate includes clinch. So I get
right,
it.
Right,
but I do get where Della Maddalena has given up opponent control. So, you know, on a 7-1 basis.
His wins are over his three UFC wins. Other than Ramazan Ameev, which I don't really consider a win, over three guys not in the UFC, or four guys not in the UFC, or five guys not in the UFC.
Yeah, but not in the UFC. I think that's a bit unfair, though, because if you look I do. sorry, I'm pulling up his record right now. If you look at David Zawada is not bad. He was like a solid UFC level guy. also had a very close fight with Robert.
He had very poor striking defense as well, and was also super willing to give up the takedowns and play.
Yeah, but you mentioned that, but now we're talking about a guy who's also very willing to give up takedowns, you know?
Yeah. I think it could be that the thing is that we're all saying Della Maddalena wins by knockout and he ends up winning by some stupid fucking submission or decision. Like,
I mean, I think he's going to win.
Something goofy. Yeah. I know. No, I get it. And I get why you're searching.
I like that.
And I do get it. And you know what? We're all about digging into grandma's couch cushions. As long as you aren't putting your mortgage on Danny Roberts, it's all about unit sizing and appropriate value. So if you're playing the money line, obviously steer clear of Jack Della, because
I'm going like a one unit issue. Spot here.
All right. That's fair, because it'll be properly sized with your other plays.
You know, I almost like him trying to maybe get a couple minutes in there, and maybe the narrative of Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts just being kind of a bum and getting scrapped in 3 seconds, like you're saying, is maybe not so true.
Fair.
And that maybe it goes like over 1.5.
Maybe a split decision.
Or, right. No, I don't know about that. Jesus. split decision with Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts. I'll never talk about Jack Della Maddalena again. But
I don't. I don't think split is like, even if Roberts were to win a decision, right? Because if he wins a decision, it's likely predicated on him having like a fair amount of grappling success, I think. I can't imagine him winning a decision where he doesn't have grappling success, because Della's going to volume the shit out of him on the feet.
Yeah.
Right.
So I that's why I don't think it goes the distance. But if it somehow does, Jack, it just by decision at +460 is so interesting. Because if Danny somehow toughs it out, I just don't think he will.
You guys don't like the over?
What is it? What's the number?
1.5, dude. It's 1.5 and even.
Oh, wow. Even? Okay.
Yeah, like now. All right.
You're speaking some languages now. And now we're starting to get real interesting, because I could see it's not like Jack is icing these guys with one punch. It's working the body, working whatever. And, you know, Danny Roberts, if he gets these clinch things, if he extends the fight, we're not saying it's going to be Poirier Chandler level type of excitement, but it could be, you could be a butthole clencher going into it. But, you know, listen, it could be, I like that it's +100 for an over 1.5. I will tend to look at those a little closer now that we've gotten into some of these control and clinch stats. Like,
I just think it's a nail biter. I don't like Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts striking offense. I don't like his striking defense. I don't that's like fair. His grab. I don't like any of it. I don't even like his nickname. I'm moving on.
All right. You don't like his nickname?
Hater alert.
He doesn't deserve it.
Hater alert.
Cool nickname.
Sound the alarm.
Yeah, that's fair.
I deserve it. Yeah, it's fair. Because, like, it you're might happen. Guy, you never know.
I appreciate that.
So, as we had our most heated debate of the night, which was a fun time, I'll say. But I actually I have my most strongest ideas of the night so far.
Most strongest ideas. Talking like
night.
A rugrat.
Hell yeah. Of the night so far on Charles Johnson versus Zhalgas Zhumagulov. ZZ Top, they like to call him. So Charles Johnson, man, like, listen, if Jeff Molina was like solidly able to be like avoid being held down and like scramble out of stuff like that, like Charles Johnson has a really good get up game. It's just like the guy he faced in his debut and on like what a week notice against Makhachev, like a couple weeks notice, maybe, you know, he won the LFA title, had a couple, you know, like a few good fights leading up to it. We've seen Charles Johnson, you know, wrestle a bit, stuff like that. But like Zhalgas Zhumagulov, what have we ever seen him actually do with his wrestling? And I think that's going to be the theme again. It's like we can scream like value boy of like Zhumagulov and all this stuff. And like, oh, you know, he's +140. It's like, have we not learned our lesson about what judges are looking for these days? Because Charles Johnson is going to be smacking this boy up from distance. That's for sure. Like that's for one. Like 100%. Like Zhalgas is boxing. For him to have like had a tough time against Albazi in that regard, against some other guys in that regard, where like Zhalgas is, you know, just not impressive aside from being able to keep things close. But guess what? The fight's lined, you know, somewhat close. I just think he's facing someone that, you know, once again, I think is just going to be able to put on more damage, more volume, and be able to separate himself from these exchanges if Zhalgas goes to his wrestling.
And I don't think plus 140 is enough if I was like sniffing around the Jalgas side at all. Like you need like plus two something for me to want to be interested. I think Johnson's going to come out motivated here to like make it up in his bounce back performance here. I think minus 165 is a solid enough line where it hasn't run away yet. And I'm not saying it's like the best play of the day, but it's the most confident money line I've felt so far as like, you know, I don't want to play anything when it's getting to like minus 175, minus 200. Like, I think this is like the kind of the sweet spot of like the end of value for me.
Yeah, I agree completely. I do really like Charles Johnson here. I've somebody that's been fading Zyglaz Zemogulov. Yeah, dude, he doesn't deserve it, bro. I really losing to Jeff Molina, right, in that split decision. That was a really close fight, but I just really not that impressive really from either guy. And I actually think that Charles Johnson versus Jeff Molina would be a really interesting fight. That's a fight I actually really want to see, maybe when Charles wins this fight. So I know that it's 34 and 31, but Zyglaz is getting old and he's looked old, and he's even more old in terms of fight damage, in terms of that, right? At what's his record? 14 and 7. Dude's certainly not afraid to lose. And unfortunately for Charles, in his short notice debut, he literally fought, you know, the worst type of opponent for him. You know, like if you do any tape on the guy, you know, coming in, his defensive grappling is a little suspect. His takedown defense is not very good, right? His get up game is very good, but, you know, he continues to get taken down. It's a clear issue. However, he versus a guy that not only is relentless with the takedown, but is an absolute dog with top control. Although had his trouble with Malcolm Gordon. What a scramble fest that fight was. All that being said, I actually think it's a fair price on Charles, and I'm going to take it. I like the younger guy with a size and reach advantage. What do you like, John?
I think it's an interesting fight. You know, I've always been, I don't want to say a Zyglaz fan because he's like a boring fighter. It's like, what are you a fan of? But like, I've respected his game. He's got like a real blue collar, like lunch pail kind of game for MMA, you know, pretty okay at everything. Not bad really at anything. You know, the best thing about Zyglaz and the worst thing are the same. You know, he's good enough everywhere that he's very, very rarely going to be out of any fights, but he's not good enough everywhere where he's ever really going to put stamps on minutes in fights. And so, you know, I look at this fight and I'm a fan of Charles Johnson. I bet him against Mokaev, actually proved to be a bad bet, but I did in fact bet in there. I mean, I think the line's fine where it is right now. I'm somewhat interested in like that Zyglaz decision plus 240, just because I do think if he has his kind of fight and he can grease it up a bit like the Molina fight, you know, he could take a grimy decision at a decent clip here. But, you know, the fundamental problem for me is what I said. I just don't see a lot of upside for him. And that's the problem. You know, Johnson does throw volume and he throws a lot of it. He's taller, he's longer. So I think there are places where Zyglaz could have success. Like, I think he can get takedowns. I don't think he can hold him down, though. I don't expect that we'll see something similar to the Mokaev fight where, you know, he can get 12 takedowns here or whatever it is and get 11 minutes of control. Like, I think 2 to 3 takedowns and maybe 2 to 3 minutes of control is a realistic expectation for Zyglaz. So with that being the case, I think you do have to think Johnson wins this at a decent clip. I don't really have any passionate takes about it, but like I said, you know, the Zemogulov decision plus 240, I mean, kind of mildly interests me.
All right. I almost want to take a stab at, like, they have this fight going the distance at minus 200, and I almost want to take a stab at Charles by finish, like, by
I don't think that's crazy
at plus 250,
right? Yeah, like, I think that's worth a stab.
He's shown himself to be a finisher at high level, you know, high level competition at an LFA.
What's a Charles submission?
Charles' submission specifically is plus 1,000, which is absolutely bonkers.
That's more interesting. He does have decent front chokes, and he is long as fuck.
He has an anaconda choke against us at the time 6-0 Carly Pangilinan.
Yeah, Pangilinan. Yeah, he's
Pangilinan. Yeah, but fair enough.
No, but he is. I mean, look, if Zalgiris takes reckless shots, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think it could be worth it. I just I don't know. Something's telling me go with Charles Johnson here.
My mind's telling me no.
Yeah.
My no, we can't sing that here. Sorry. Can't sing that here. You have to get about to get us canceled before we even get started here.
My God. yeah, we got Jennifer Maia versus Marina Moroz.
Our group, the Playboy model.
Playboy model, the one and only in the UFC. Of all the OnlyFans models we have one Playboy model.
It's a Playboy exclusive, so it's basically the OnlyFans of Playboy.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, it's tasteful, you know? Like,
it's actually not.
All right. Well, I mean, who knows? So anyways, Jennifer Maia, relatively speaking. Marina Moroz is minus 190. Moroz has a 3-inch height advantage, 3-inch reach advantage. She's 3 years younger, so triple three for the Triple C podcast right now. Ultimately, if we're going strictly off like paper tape, you know, Jennifer Maia should have a better chance than the line in this fight. But like going back and actually watching how it happens, I just don't really feel great about it. Unless she like goes with the heavy takedown approach that, you know, she's at least tried the last couple fights, like not heavy takedown approach, but like heavier. it's just a lot to ask for, Jennifer Maia. And like, as Daz is saying, over 2.5, it's minus 355. I guess you might as well. It's like one of those ones that like Jennifer Maia is not going to finish here. Right, like that doesn't happen, does it?
It doesn't usually. I just don't know where she's at. We've seen so many different people retire or just kind of let it go. Because at the same time, like the Jennifer Maia that was working her way towards a title shot, like right against Valentina Shevchenko, right, just in 2020, like this should just be narrative. Marina Moroz has been an underdog in her last 5 straight UFC fights. All of a sudden, she's a sizable favorite here against Jennifer Maia, who is a solid veteran. I guess they both technically have 9 UFC fights. Marina's just had a ton of time off in between with her injuries. I also just don't necessarily – it's like it's that classic tale of who did Marina Moroz actually beat and who did Jennifer Maia lose to, right? Losing to Fiore, Chikagian and Valentina Shevchenko and Caitlin Chikagian, right? Again, like there's a tough losses. You know, it's like you said, though, the way she beat Jessica I was concerning. Joanne Wood beating her is not very impressive anymore, or maybe never was. But I don't know. I think the Marina Moroz line is too steep, but I, like you said, I'm not sure where Jennifer Maia is at all. So I'd like to see her come out and cash a dog spot, but I have no confidence in it. Maybe John can convince me on something.
No, I mean, I pretty much have the exact same take. I mean, look, in terms of level of competition, it's night and day, right? You know, Maya's been fighting the best women at 125 there is, but she's also largely been losing to them. Obviously, you know, she did take a round off Shevchenko, but, you know, that was a round Shevchenko got stuck on her back, as she's wont to do when she gets taken down. Maia had one competitive fight with Chikagian, got dumpstered in the other, got dumpstered by Madame Fioro. The level of competition is what makes me lean to the Maia side here. And if I was making a bet, it would be on the Maia side. But I think Moroz is a decent talent. You know, she's a former Ukrainian national boxing champion. She's a decent wrestler. She's been training at ATT for years. Do I think she can come out here and wrestle Maia? Probably not. But, you know, I mean, look at her pay stats. You know, she's a very good boxer. We saw her absolutely piece up Myra Buena Silva a couple years ago, right before her extended hiatus. I think Moroz is a decent fighter, and I think her ceiling is a lot higher than Maya's is.
Agreed.
There's some reason to give credence to Maia, just because you would expect, right, some positive regression, at least statistically, against Moroz coming from Fiora and Chikagian to here. But at the same time, it's like I don't see a lot of finishing upside here. Pace at absolute best is a wash and likely favors Moroz. Wrestling likely favors Moroz. I'm pretty happy to pass it.
I agree. And yeah, I mean, Moroz is a former Ukrainian national, was on the Ukrainian national boxing team. So she definitely has got hands. And again, like, she's just in absolutely like dynamite shape. Like, she just lives in the gym. So, yeah. You know, I don't know what Jennifer Meyer does. So, yeah, I happy pass. Good job, John. I like that.
There you go. So, awesome. So that'll, bring us right along to our next one. We got Vince Morales versus Miles Johns. You see, Johns, you know, he might have, you know, a little bit of a he's a little bit younger. They're the same height. He's given up a little bit of reach to Vince Morales. But, you know, Miles Johns has kind of been the shinier prospect as far as the UFC goes, coming out of Fortis MMA. Had a nice little introduction, and it's just like kind of fallen flat as far as performances go in recent memory. And, you know, it's just kind of hard to trust a guy like that going forward, which is he's kind of relying on like one dimensional boxing at times, or like when he does shift to the wrestling approach, it's like, how long can he really keep that up for us at times? And it's hard to trust us. So, I mean, and when he's lost, it's been by finish. So, I get that Castaneda and Bautista are, you know, pretty good opponents. I don't think Morales is on, like, the exact same level. But, you know, same time, like, Jonathan Martinez is a pretty fucking good volume opponent who's a lot faster and has a lot more weapons to offer than a guy like Miles Johns. So, plus 140, Vince Morales, minus 165, Miles Johns. I don't want to trust Miles Johns at that number. Give me Vince Morales at plus 140 for, like, a little sprinkle. But I don't, it's not something that like I love. It's just something that's keeping me off playing like John's heavy. And that just tells me like, hey, like take a chance, you know,
take a chance. Yeah. This fight is super interesting from like a completely, you love UFC fights. You want to watch all the fights. Like these guys are split mirror images of each other, especially when you look at like their tapology, right? If you look at their last four losses, right, they're both 2-2. They both have their two wins sandwiched between their two losses, and their two losses come to guy, right? The first guy's in Mario Bautista and Chris Gutierrez respectively are pretty damn good fighters, and then the guys they lost to more recently in John Castaneda and Jonathan Martinez are more like kind of fighters. So right, the guys they beat are like Anderson Dos Santos and Kevin Natividad, Luis Smoke and Draco Rodriguez. Both of those guys, all those guys are like Luis Smoke probably being the best of the bunch, like still not very high level. So you really don't know what you have with any of these guys. I think that's really, really interesting. So to me, I'm just kind of excited to see the fight. What I do see right away that jumps out at me is that Vince Morales at 64% finish rate and Miles Johns at 57% finish rate are fairly low in terms of generally getting finishes in the UFC. So I kind of like the fight to go the distance, which is at minus 135, seems to kind of be a steal to me. So that's kind of where I lean. I don't trust Vince Morales at all. He's basically, you know, kind of C plus at, you know, everything he does fairly well rounded. And on the same token, I don't trust Miles Johns at all. I haven't seen anything too much that I like from him. Late round knockouts of Anderson Dos Santos and Kevin Natividad show me that it's taking you too long to knock these guys out. It's good that you did it, though. John, what do you got for us?
Yeah, I mean, Vince Morales is pretty much dead to me after Chris Gutierrez fight and then the Jonathan Martinez fight. But I mean, with that being the case, I still might bet him here, which makes me sick to my stomach. I guess my issue with Morales.
Awesome. That's awesome. He's dead to me, but I might have to dig up his grave and get back in there and see if I can revive his corpse.
I've always thought he's relatively talented, right? You know, he had a very close fight early in his career with Song Yadong. Obviously, that's aged extraordinarily well. You know, he has at times showed to be a guy who's quite talented. Like, you look at the Luis Smolka fight, came out super aggressive and, you know, put him out quickly. But then you have his other fights, you know, where he lets Chris Gutierrez kick his calf off, where he lets Draco Rodriguez hang in a fight that should have never been competitive and go to a close decision. But, like, I look at them skill-wise, and as TB touched on, you know, Miles Johns, he's got a jab, he's got a cross, he's got a calf kick. but he doesn't really mix it up a whole lot. He doesn't have much else. He's very low volume. You know, he likes to stick and move, but Morales cuts the cage pretty well. You know, the big concern here is the calf kick. I think that's obvious to all of us. But with Johns, it's not like you're talking about a guy like Chris Gutierrez or Jonathan Martinez is going to throw 60 leg kicks. Historically, he's more of like a 15 to 20 kick kind of guy. Now, maybe he'll be intelligent for this fight and rip them because it's Vince Morales and everybody knows Vince Morales doesn't check kicks. I don't really know. But what I do know is John's upside is pretty limited. He's very low volume. We know the pace is going to be pretty similar. We know that John's, when he doesn't have his game working, tends to wilt a bit. I think Morales is the bigger hitter. He's obviously the longer guy. I actually kind of think he's the better boxer, to be honest. So it's really just a matter of, will Vince let his leg get kicked off again? And will Miles Johns throw those leg kicks? And I don't know, but I do feel like skill for skill, the line is certainly off. And I also kind of like, you know, the Morales KO is about, or Morales ITD is like plus 450, which to me, given what's happened when Johns has faced adversity and how hard he's wilted, I kind of like that. So I like Morales ITD, like him small on the money line as well.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, you really can't hate that at all with who's been finishing Miles Johns with losing to John Castaneda. It's bad.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Always such a ringing endorsement. I certainly can't hate that.
I can't. It doesn't mean
you like it. It just means you can't hate it.
You can't hate it.
It's not a ringing endorsement though.
I mean
it's different than an endorsement in my book. If you catch my drift. Is this just, you know?
Well, no, like I said, I just think like only knocking out Luis Smoko, who I probably had a weight cut issue that fight. I just don't know that he really knocks many people out despite having the kind of power to maybe do so, or at least looking like he's got the power to do so. So yeah, like I said, I kind of like both of these guys to go the distance just based on their fights, their past fights, but. Anything is possible with those 4 ounce gloves, and any guy could come out super hungry. So I like that. Like I said, I can't hate it. I will justify my position. Damn it.
Fair enough. Well, we're on to the next fight, and we're on to my favorite part of the show because it's pretty Ricky Tercios versus Kevin Native Daddy Natividad. This is going to be a pretty ugly fight if Ricky has his way here. I'm just expecting like a washout of pace. In the last fight, we saw Ayman Zahabi's like a real veteran in the game, at least. And like someone that's kind of reinvented his mental approach. So like that old guy that we thought we were fading kind of didn't show up there against Ricky Tercios. And in fact, put the veteran lesson on Tercios in his debut. And Tercios decided to take the Macy Barber approach of striking at air, which, you know, to each their own, just not too successful. My boy, Ricky. But in this fight, you got the height, the reach, you know, and the volume. And Kevin has shown to have zero, I guess, fortitude. All of his losses are by the knockout. So I'm not saying Ricky's going to knock him out or anything. But it is pretty interesting. The over 2.5 is minus 215 for a guy that's only been, you know, defeated by knockout. And, you know, I think Natividad is really going to need a puncher's chance to get a win here. So, I mean, the under is kind of juicy here when you're looking at a plus 175 under 2.5. But yeah, I think also Ricky Tercios minus 155. There's so much fucking value on there because of how bad he looked his last fight. And Guru's fighting me tooth and nail. He's telling me, like, dude, like, Ricky sucks, boy. Like, look, did you see his last fight? Like, it's like, yeah, but did you watch every other fight Ricky's had, like, including the Ultimate Fighter? It's like, he's a wild boy. And, like, he showed up like a fucking pussy his last fight. It happens. It was his debut.
No.
Like,
no,
we no, give no, you a no, pass,
no.
buddy.
No. No pass.
All right, go ahead, Guru. Take it away.
I can't do it. First off, how could you possibly expect to try to feed me Ricky Tercios at favorite odds again after what I saw? I don't care about jitters. He didn't hit the guy. It was bizarro world. I've never seen anything like it. And you're rooting for a finish against a guy that has 9 decision wins in his career. He's not even finishing guys on the regional scene. He's not, he didn't finish anybody on The Ultimate Fighter. And you know what? For my money, he didn't even beat Brady Bam Bam Highstander. He didn't do it. Brady Bam Bam Highstand. He didn't do it. He didn't beat him. Didn't happen. Sorry.
All right, so, Mushroom, no one can finish one of your lunches. But
Nobody.
Only you could.
Dude, that's crazy. Your lunch is making me so hungry. I show my coworker and he pines over it every time. It's actually really awesome because we get to – anyway, my job's crazy. I get terrible food to eat. It's so funny. And we just look at your lunches and just die every day. It's awesome. I really like Kevin Natividad here. I think he's maybe not the worst fighter on planet Earth. His striking defense is a problem, as you've already seen. He just likes to stand and bang, man. He's got a decent right hand, solid counter left hook, right? Willing to move side to side. The problem is he's got no head movement, right? And he likes to his face likes to find the punches. But I think after taking, right, it's actually kind of crazy. After getting knocked out in 50 seconds by Dana Bakary, which is actually kind of excusable. The dude's a fucking savage. He's taken a year and a half off. He takes the kind of layoff that you like to see when you've taken now two KO losses in a row. So you're now fighting a guy that's not going to finish you, at least with a one-shot KO. If it does and you go the way of Dom Reyes, like, you should probably hang him up. But I don't think that's happening here. I think it's going to be a closer fight. I think that Ricky Tercios is scared to get in a fight. I don't know how much he's actually going to be able to hit this guy. And the only way he's going to win is if he actually uses his grappling and holds him down. So if it stays on the feet, I like Kevin Natividad's chances. So let's roll.
Well, Guru, I hate to say it, but it's rookie season. I think
I made a really good case for a shitty dog there. Huh?
I kind of come down with TB here, where it's like the pace, like. I can't defend this a hobby fight. It's like, what am I going to say? You know, it looked like absolute shit no matter how you want to frame it. But, you know, Zahabi did use, you know, Ringcraft fairly efficiently in that fight. And you can see Ricky struggling to cut him off. I don't really think Natividad has the footwork that Zahabi does to do that. On top of which, you know, Natividad's another one of these guys who's like, it's easy to get free volume off on him. Like, you go back and watch his regional fights. You know, this guy's going to split with Andy Perez two fights before he came to the UFC. His last fight before fighting Kyle Estrada, pretty much losing on volume to Kyle Estrada, who's not particularly high volume, before he knocks him out. We saw it in the Miles Johns fight. Guy landed 33 significant strikes over like 13 and a half minutes. So, and on the Ricky side, yeah, we have as a hobby fight, it's ugly, but we also have data for like actual stats from two other fights on contenders and in the UFC, where he landed over 100 significant strikes. And then obviously, if you go back and watch his tough fights, I mean, the guy's a volume machine. To me, I actually think Natividad's chances of winning minutes on the feet are very, very slim here, just because of volume alone. Could KO him. I mean, Ricky does stop punches with his face quite a bit, and Natividad certainly hits hard. I think grappling-wise, Natividad's probably the better wrestler, but I don't think he has the cardio to keep a heavy grappling pace. I don't think he has much chance to hold him down for extended periods. So for me, like, I kind of think Ricky minus 200 is a bit more fair than where the current line is. So I have a decent bet on him.
Yep. Yeah, I guess, and to your point, the only person probably on planet Earth with lower striking accuracy at 31% than Ricky Tercios is at 24%. My boy Kevin Natividad.
Dude, how wild is it that Ricky Tercios has a fight in his sample where he went 27 for 273 and has better striking accuracy than Kevin Natividad?
Like, bro.
Come on, Kevin, you gotta fight. You gotta fight, Kevin.
Guru, I have a proposal.
Yeah.
This might be one of my better ideas.
I'm listening.
So, if you're still firmly on the Kevin side.
I don't firmly?
Okay, well, listen, just going
firmly
forward.
Firmly grasp it in
if
your hand.
If we're ever, shout out, what is that, SpongeBob, right?
SpongeBob.
Oh my God, so good. So anyways, if we're ever on the opposite sides, what we could do is our bet could be that if like you win the bet,
then I don't get to do my TB nicknames the next week. And if you lose the bet, then I get to do them for the whole card.
No, I'm not doing it on Kevin Natividad. No fucking way. That's like you ever see Homer Simpson and he eats the donut, the forbidden donut from hell? I'm not selling my soul for a donut here. No chance. It's not happening.
Fair enough. Touche. Vanessa Demopoulos versus Maria Oliveira. Vanessa, did I really win my last fight? Demopoulos versus Maria. Did I really win? Nah, she won her last fight, Oliveira. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, I guess my thoughts on this fighter that just unless Demopoulos is pulling off a submission, Oliveira's got every advantage in the book here, and she should use it to her advantage to find the victory. I think that while it is a little weird, I mean, like, it's a little weird that this line is -115 and -105. Oliveira, I would say Demopoulos is kind of like getting knocked down by Silvana Gomez-Juarez really doesn't look as good in retrospect at this point. And like what she pulls off after it really is not as impressive. Once again, in retrospect at this point, it's like you have to expect Oliveira to be willing to go and play in that type of activity. And maybe she's stupid enough to do it. But I think if anything, Oliveira has been facing people that are trying to take her down. And I don't think Demopoulos has a good enough offensive wrestling game. So if Oliveira gets to play this fight from distance in her world, yeah, it's Oliveira all day for me. Especially someone, what, a 10 – on paper, I got a 10-inch reach advantage. Is that fucking serious?
What?
Nah.
There's no way, right? Like, I had to fuck that
up.
I'll
pull it up right now. And like, what the fuck? That seems impossible. Seven inches.
Okay, yeah, but still, that's fucking crazy for some. Vanessa sucks at distance striking, no offense, but 38% accuracy and 32% defense. Okay, maybe I do mean offense. Like, that's really bad. That's really bad. Oliveira's got 70% defense and the same accuracy. So she doubles up the defense with the same accuracy.
The problem is as you can see, they both have problems giving up opponent control time. So I almost think it's like if either one of them falls on top of each other, they could just stay there.
So that's why -115 Oliveira is like a 2 out of 3 for me. I just think Demopoulos is cute and she's won a few fights and like I'm going to say in lucky
fight. Maria Oliveira is fire. Have you seen
Yes,
her?
I know, oh, but like goodness. Come on. Like no, I get it, but like ultimately, what I'm saying is like, yo, okay, I get it. Oliveira's boxing's terrible, but like, what do you call Demopoulos' striking then? Like, what the fuck? I mean, listen, at least I know Oliveira's trying to get away from getting hit, where like Demopoulos is like, give me more. Like, I mean, fuck. Like, okay, Guru, talk to me. Like, what do you got?
I don't have too much, honestly. I don't see even too much value in the props.
Thank you, Dez.
I just, I guess I lean towards Maria Oliveira. Just because, you know, of my feeling on size, age, and reach. You're getting 60% blindly, so I'll just lean with my 60%. So it's such a cop-out. It's such a bad handicap. It's just, it's really
as
tough.
As long
because
as you admit what you're doing.
Because, again, it's a split decision, which was a fairly close fight and a sloppy fight with Gloria DePaula, who's no longer in the UFC. And a split decision with Jin Yu Fry, like, who just got absolutely murked in her last fight. Not much to say. John, too long.
I mean, I would say Jin Yu Fry is probably comparable level to Gloria DePaula. I like Demopoulos here, to be honest. I bet her. I'm very small on her. It's not a very passionate take. But I guess my view is, you know, look, I can't disagree with the height, reach, and like the volume that we saw from Oliveira in the DePaula fight, but Oliveira is a sloppy striker, and it's not like Demopoulos is low volume. Like, she's not going to sit there and just be like, I'm not going to throw strikes. You know, she'll bounce the mouthpiece and go for it. You know, she had was competitive the later rounds of the fight on the feet with Lupi Godinez, which was pretty impressive to me. Obviously, she landed quite a bit of strikes against Fry, too, and was able to grease that fight up enough in the clinch to kind of steal a decision there. I don't think she won the fight, but that's neither here nor there. And so all of that is to say, while Oliveira has a distinct volume edge on paper, I do think you know, she's a lot more harmless than Demopolis is. I think Demopolis is going to be able to hit her here. I think she can probably it's so hard to evaluate her wrestling because, like, Oliveira is by far the weakest defensive grappler Demopolis has fought. So, like, Demopolis getting a takedown or two, I think, is in play. And so I guess I would lean slightly on minutes, maybe slightly in Oliveira. But Demopolis has all the grappling upside in this fight. And yeah. She also has almost all the finishing equity in the fight, in my opinion. And so with that dynamic, like, you have to make her a small favorite. So I have a small bet on her. But, yeah, I mean, I expect it's going to be a competitive fight.
I actually really do. I don't hate it. I really do like it because she's at the better gym with Black House MMA.
She's actually at Fight Ready now.
Now she's at Fight. She lives in Arizona, Las Vegas area. She's always in the Performance Institute, bouncing around from camp to camp. She's really somebody absolutely dedicated to her craft. Loves it. Works extremely, extremely hard. So I know, like you said, in terms of finishing equity, like, you're not going to finish Vanessa Demopolis easily. She's not going to go away. So I, especially if you could get her at plus money, I actually did like Vanessa Demopolis, but that line has disappeared. So that's why I'm kind of more off. But if I could have gotten plus money on Vanessa, I would have taken it as well. And I'm also somebody that called Maria Oliveira over Gloria, like, before that.
Well, that was a great call.
Yeah, I just, like, so just similarly, like, I didn't see anything too much on the tape. I just felt like it was going to be a closer fight, and Gloria was like a minus 300 favorite in that fight. Yeah. I'm like, that's silly. You got to earn it. These are some of the bets that we've, you know, the lessons that we've really learned through losing money out of our own pocket.
Yeah, that's the only way to do it. You got to lose before you can win, right?
Yeah, 100%. TB, you ready to move on to the next one? Anybody else got anything else for this? I think we beat it to death.
All right, great. So here we go. We got Brady Houston versus Fernie Garcia, and we had Bam Bam on our show when this fight first got announced. He reached out to us. We had reached out to him, you know, a while back, and he was like, hey, now that I have a fight announced, like, let's get a little interview going. So we got to learn about his recovery from injury and coming back and, you know, that experience. So make sure you guys check out that video with the interview, Brady Houston. It's in our fighter interviews playlist. And make sure you like this video while you're here hanging out with us. It's been a fun time so far. And thank you at MMA Fox, John Stargaryen MMA, for joining us, because great dude. And we're having an awesome time with the discourse, man. So here we go. Brady, Bam Bam, minus 170, and Fernie, plus 145. If Brady sticks to the high volume wrestling approach that he's shown to us time and time again, that we've seen him, you know, for a low level, you know, fighter with, I say low level fighter, I should say a low experience fighter with only 7 total fights, we've actually seen a pretty good sample size of Brady against decent opponents in his last few outings. So, Reddinghouse, Murdoch, and Tercios, I mean, all really good fights and all showing extremely high volume grappling. So at the end of the day, I find myself hammering a Brady bet. I think it's my best bet of the day at minus 170, probably to win a couple units. So like 3.4 to win 2. I just think the volume wrestling approach for a guy that's been putting in the work, I think we're going to see a level up in the striking. I really like how he took to the coaching from Volk in the camp when he was in there. So, and I see him in great shape on the gram. Like everything is it's coming up Brady, you know what I mean? And we ain't talking DFS by the numbers, but he said max bet. PS Mushroom, where is your fucking YouTube profile picture? That is a great high stand for high stand third or decision. Let's fucking go, boys. We're rolling with Bam Bam and, like, insane Moda Frivola, our boy that we interviewed the week before. Like, we're cashing the fuck out on our boy this week, too. Guru, you got any, like, discourse on that? Or you feeling that wrestling's enough?
We're rolling with Bam Bam, baby. He's
rolling, rolling.
Yeah, listen, man. He's an absolute dog. Young kid. Scrappy. Willing to get into it. High pace. I just don't think Fernie, who's like kind of more of a distance pitter-patter kind of guy, likes to counter. I just don't know what he's going to have for Brady. I think Brady really wants to get this win back and a win under his belt and prove himself. I think he's hungry. So, you know, Fernie's going to have to counter him and put him out of there to get it done. Otherwise, I do. I think he's going to struggle with some of the grappling and some of the striking pace. And, yeah, Brady's biggest concern is, right, getting tagged a bunch by, you know, Ricky Tercios, who, again, maybe we'll see what his striking accuracy truly is. So we'll see what all this is worth. But to me, Brady, High Stand is your tough champion. He beat Ricky. So I'd like to see him get a win here over Fernie. What do you got for us, sir?
Yeah, I think it's a good fight on paper for Brady, to be honest. My biggest concern with Brady is really just I do think he does not pace himself very well. Like, we have seen him slow down quite a bit late in fights. What I will say is he is what I'd call an effective gasser. Like, he's visibly exhausted, but like still fighting through exhaustion. But as you guys touched on, he does tend to get sloppy when that happens, start stopping shots in his face. Fortunately for him, he seems fairly durable, but that's my biggest concern insofar as his fight goes. Because in terms of the actual matchup, you know, I taped a bit of Fernie's wrestling from regionals. I wasn't very impressed in it. I think Brady's going to be able to get takedowns fairly easily here. It wouldn't really surprise me if he was able to sub Garcia fairly easily. My only thing there is just not a lot of jiu-jitsu footage of him, so I don't have the best read of that. But I do think Brady is going to maul him for as long as he's fresh. It's just really a question to me is, like, is he going to cardio dump later in this fight and Fernie take over? I don't personally think so. I am moderately interested in betting Brady, to be honest. I'm kind of hoping for a better number than where it is now. I see it's a minus 170. I'd like 150 ideally. But I do think, you know, the grappling edge here is quite wide for Brady. And, you know, it's not as if Brady's taking a huge step up in competition against a guy with 5 to 10 UFC fights who has experience with this kind of fighter. You know, Fernie Garcia's got one UFC fight to Jurny Newsom, who's whatever, and didn't look very good in it. So, yeah, I like the Brady side here.
Let's get it, baby. That's a full agreement on Brady. Woo!
All right, sick. Yeah, so, I mean, I love it. When you got the boys all in agreement, when we've been willing to disagree throughout the night, that just tells me we're in max bet territory, you know? And it's in that sweet spot of where I told you I don't want that minus 175, and it's been sliding. I could have got a minus 155 earlier in the week.
I wish I grabbed that.
Yeah, the good money is on it. It's sliding, but it's still in respectable territory. Like, I just need to see the weigh-ins. I got to stick true. I got to wait till Friday. Wait, make sure, like, everything, like, you got to confirm that everything is actually good to go, and then you pull the trigger on your bets here. So, finally, this is our finally, right? Yeah, so our finally, we have Natalia Silva.
Or first. Depends where you look at it.
Yep. All about your perspective or relativity, should I say. Anyways, oh God, physics boy is going to chill out. Hey, that's what I'm working on this week, okay? It's really fucking difficult. Anyways.
All right, Einstein.
That's me. Oh, Jesus Christ. I got a different answer. So anyways.
What?
Yeah, I've been working on stuff. So anyways, Natalia Silva, she comes in having impressed us all against Jasmine Jazdavicius. All of us Kay Hansen only fan subscribers saying, hey, wait a second. If Kay Hansen got defeated by Jasmine, there's no way Natalia, I haven't fought in 3 years, Sylvia's going to beat Jasmine Jazdavicius. Well, now Natalia Silva actually came out and put on a really impressive performance. And Teresa Bleda is coming off a contender series with, like, a gigantic size advantage. But isn't Natalia Silva used to that at this point? So, yeah, I mean, the line minus 165 plus 140. I think it's fair. Generally, I want to fade these contender series people, especially a 21-year-old unexperienced fighter. Someone that kind of, like, brutally uses their size without, like, you know, as much technique as I would say I saw from Sylvan her last time out. So I think Bleda is going to be a really good prospect. I just think this fight, like, the line makes sense. So there's no need for me to play it, though. It just makes fucking sense. Like, good job, guys. That's my pick. Natalia Silva by, like, minus 165. There you go.
Yeah, no, I disagree. I'm not
sure. Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm not sure here. You've got, if accurate, Silva's reach is 65 inches. I don't know why we have it listed, which gives Bleda a 6-inch reach advantage and a 5-inch reach advantage in height. She is huge. And
that's what Jasmine had.
Okay. But she's also a wrestler.
Oh,
a wrestler that doesn't use specifically trips and other bullshit to try to get somebody down. You've seen Teresa's actually relentless with the takedown, shows decent top control, right? The problem with Teresa and why she didn't get a contract originally is that she was like a minus 500 favorite on Dana White Contender Series and didn't do any ground and pound until the third round, end of the third round. And even still, she nearly finished her opponent. I just think that, again, Silva's an absolutely awesome prospect. Her striking is phenomenal. Very quick, straight punches, sharp high kicks. She's even good in the, you know, good in the clinch. You can't tell whether she's throwing a low kick or a high kick. She's really snappy with them too. But at the same time, she's willing to get wild and, you know, willing to throw unnecessary spin moves and stuff. And when you're throwing kicks and when you're throwing spin moves, it leaves you very open to get taken down by somebody in Blada who is super willing to go for the takedown. And I've already seen Natalia Silva pull guard against Marina Rodriguez multiple times. Instead of fighting out of tough clinch positions against the cage or fighting in other positions, she literally flops down and pulls guard. So I'm not sure somebody that is willing to be on their back against Bleda, that, like, I'm not sure that that's a good idea. So I'm not sure that she's earned a favorite spot here, I guess, especially when she was just a sizable underdog, a plus 200 underdog to Jasmine. I don't know that anybody knows what they expect with her. So I'm not riding. I'm not riding her as a chalky favorite here. What do you got for us, John? Last, finally.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know. I'm not betting it, but I'll say this. It's kind of weird because there's a reason Natalia Silva ended up plus 220 against Jasmine. It wasn't just, you know, Jasmine was coming off a win against Kay Hansen. Natalia's regional tape pre-UFC was not very good. And then she gets there, and like, I'm not going to die. She looked great. Her striking looked great. She managed distance very effectively. But Guru brought up a good point. And, you know, it's something I brought up on my show earlier tonight. The takedowns Jasmine was throwing at her are almost all upper body. And that's it. The competency requirements for defending that are very different than for legs. And basically, if you can just basically pummel and grab a wizard, they're not very hard to defend. Just the reality. Has she improved her takedown defense on defending double legs? I don't really know. It's very possible she hasn't. And the thing is, if Bleda gets her down, here's another question, because all of the regional tape from Natalia Silva showed Natalia Silva playing guard and throwing up arm bars. I am, like, pretty confident Bleda can float on top if she gets on top of her. And that's a kind of a concern, because if she plays guard, well, this could just be a story of two takedowns for Bleda is the fight, you know? She ends up riding her out on top. I'm not saying that is the case. I don't say it with a high degree of certainty because I wasn't very high on Bleda coming into Dana White's Contender Series, and I still do think she's a massively flawed fighter. Like, I think Silva's advantage on the feet is pronounced, and I'm still not sure how good of a wrestler Bleda actually is, but I know she knows. It's like, I know she shoots double his ankles, though, and it's like that uncertainty, like what we're betting on in fights is uncertainty. You know, that's where lines are capped, trying to find inefficiencies there. And this is just such an enormous uncertainty where it's like, if Bleda can get a takedown easy and Silva plays guard, Bleda could look minus 200. On the other side of the coin, Silva could look minus 300 if Bleda can't grapple her or Silva learned to get up. And so it's like, I don't feel comfortable taking a side with that dynamic in play either here.
Yeah, and like, in like a meta thought, at least for me, why do you think the UFC, after denying this chick a contract, signed her anyway 2 months later? Like,
it's a good question.
Yeah, like she's a young prospect at 21 years old that's actually not terrible. However, she gets caught in a triangle at the end of round one of the Dana White Contender Series fight. And, you know, it would be interesting to see if Silva could pull off a submission in that respect. Like, I guess I wouldn't be completely shocked.
I wouldn't be shocked, but like Bleda defended the heel hooks and flowed to each position pretty right.
And she didn't, get subbed. So like it was in there good and she didn't get subbed. So it's just an interesting point, but yeah, I lean the dog here. I can't play Silva. I'd like to see more from her. Let her light this girl up.
I agree.
Takedowns, and then that's some real deal Holyfield stuff.
Yeah, let me see the answers. I want to know what the answers to those grappling questions are. That's it.
I love it. I love it.
Awesome. All right. Well, hey, that was a fucking great time. Shout out MMA Fox. Shout out Guru, Scouting MMA. And Shout out you guys in the chat for keeping it popping the whole time. Mushroom back in the fucking building. Thanks to your boy TB to block him, but then I brought him back, so I absolved myself, you know. It was an accident.
It only took 3 months.
Hey, it was a process, you know. StreamYard, got to talk to them, got to talk to the boy Mushroom. Thank you, Papa Chuck. We appreciate you. And do what's on the screen, people. Come on, like, subscribe, help us out, because we're going to be live. We were in the house last week at UFC 281 as fans. We will be in the house next week, Wednesday, for the press conference at PFL in New York City. And then Friday, post-fight interviews, just general vibes. I just got a brand new camera, Rebel T7, little Canon boy. So working on my angles, trying to get my filters right. The right lenses and stuff, but we'll be live streaming media day, and we'll be doing some content post fight at PFL. So please make sure you're following us, because it's gonna be a fun time. And then we should be at Bellator December 9th at the Mohegan Sun. Once again, media access, should be doing some stuff. We're gonna be hoping to get up there that Thursday, the day before, for the ceremonial weigh-ins and stuff, if we got that going on. But we'll see.
Maybe, and TB and I haven't talked about this at all, maybe we'll try to actually get out some sort of PFL breakdown, talk about type podcast, keep the week rolling, because next week we are actually off.
Wow.
There are no UFC fights next week. We have a week off. How terrible. You know, some of us content creators will actually enjoy maybe a little bit of the time and pressure off to regroup. But we come back with a banger Saturday, December 3rd from Orlando. Steven Wonderboy Thompson taking on Kevin Holland. We can bring in on Narco Cop. First time we're having him on. Can't wait to have him on. So thanks for everybody for tuning in. Make sure you're following MMA Fox. Awesome guy, John Stargarian, Club and Sub Podcast. If you're not already subscribed, listening, that's a mistake. Those guys are awesome. We've already had Mr. Andrew Gombas on, so happy to complete that.
What? No, that was Danny Legs. Danny Legs. And now we need...
Right? God, what,
no, Luke.
No, Gombas, Thomas, and Magic. Oh, my goodness. I'm such a jerk off. It's too many podcasts. I listen to all of them. It's too many. It's no such thing as too many, but it's too many sharp guys, man. I gotta keep up, so I gotta mix up some names every here once in a while. John, thanks so much for tuning in.
Thanks,
man,
dude,
for joining us. Guru Scouting MMA, Twitter Verdict, Instagram Tapology, if you're not already. My awesome co-host, TB Scouting MMA. Take care, and hopefully see you next week, and if not, 2 weeks. So,
peace, guys.
Be good.